Cool. No, it doesn't. Good afternoon, everybody. And it started like almost instantly. I was just telling Rob, it's like, oh, it usually takes a couple seconds. So welcome, everybody, for joining me and for joining Rob. This is Hashtag No Limits, and I am your host, Shelley Kino. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. And I believe that just like Ophelia says in Hamlet, that we know who we are, but not who we will be. And that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells, then it reforms into the butterfly. And then, as if that's not enough, it has to fight and its way out of the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly. And that isn't easy. I can only imagine. Obviously, I've never done it. But I also know that it's not easy busting through limits that society places upon a person. And so today, I'm very excited to share with you a dad of not one, not two, but three sons, all of them who have autism. And he is going to share with us the highs and the lows of being a single dad, raising these boys, and all of them through their journey and all the things that they have busted through. And if you don't know him as Rob, if you've seen him before, he's also known as the Autism Dad, or if you've heard his voice, he has his own podcast, of which I was on a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And so you can check that out, check my episode out, and make sure that, you know, to do all the businessy things you like, you subscribe, you know, do all that stuff. But Rob, welcome. Thanks for joining me. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Thank you.
Wow, you had to think about it.
Well, I have to think about what day it is. Anymore. Everything just sort of slurs together. I was just talking to somebody in a meeting not too long ago, and I couldn't remember what day it was. So yes, I'm doing okay today. Thank you for asking. Glad to be here.
All right. Good. Yes. Thanks for joining me. Hopefully you and I are going to do some further collaboration mm-hmm. on your podcast, or, you know, maybe something we can work out here as well. Or where are you located? What state?
I'm in Ohio, Northeast Ohio.
You're okay. And I'm in Southern Illinois. So maybe we can meet in Indiana and, you know, do something there in person.
Indiana would be the farthest west I've been, actually.
Really?
I don't travel very often.
Oh, well, I guess with three children, four, and then adding on the autism, each one of them. So tell us about your family. Tell us about you. Tell us how you've gotten to the point where you are today.
Yeah. So, I have three kids, Gavin, Elliot, and Emmett. Gavin is 22 and Elliot is 16 and Emmett just turned 14. I met Gavin when he was about 12 months old when I met him. He was my ex-wife's son from her first marriage. And, I've raised him since he was about 12 months old. And, I adopted him. I think we keep debating this, and it's terrible that I don't remember the age that I adopted him, but it didn't change anything for me. Right. So like, it's sort of like an incidental kind of thing. But I ended up adopting him, and then we had, Elliot and Emmett, and, Gavin was originally diagnosed with, autism back in 2005 when he was diagnosed. And he was kind of unique in the sense that he developed typically until he hit like his third or fourth birthday. And then he started to rapidly regress. It was almost like, it felt like it was overnight. And like everything changed. He was like a different person. We had to kind of get to know the new version of him. And Elliot and Emmett were diagnosed about the same time, actually. Elliot would have been going into preschool. And yeah, so like Gavin presents very differently than his other two brothers, but you know, it's all kind of relative. I don't know anything else at this point, so it's sort of my normal, you know.
Right. Yeah. So when you say about the same time, like all three of them were diagnosed at approximately the same time frame or the same ages?
No, Elliot and them were diagnosed at about the same time frame because Emmett was already undergoing the diagnosis process because he was nonverbal at the time. And Elliot presented differently than Emmett did, and he presented differently than Gavin did. So I didn't notice anything. I didn't pick up on anything until he started preschool. And then when you put him in a situation with sort of neurotypical peers, it was obvious that there was some, you know, concerns. And so both he and Emmett were diagnosed about the same time. Okay, that's why Emmett was
right.
2 and Elliot was 5, I think, going into kindergarten or preschool.
Yeah. And so what sort of things did you see that you said that, you know, they've each presented differently? So what sort of things did your oldest do compared to the middle, compared to the youngest?
Yeah. So Gavin was, Gavin's behaviors were very sort of extreme. So very aggressive, he wasn't aggressive towards people. It was like more self-interest kind of stuff. But that kind of overnight regression was significant. Like, and I was just talking about this, with Eileen Lamb from, the Autism Cafe not too long ago, because her son regressed as well. And it was like we had to kind of grieve the loss of the child that we had for like 4 years and get to know the child who existed. So like all of his likes and dislikes changed, his personality changed. He didn't like being touched, didn't give hugs, like all that kind of stuff just sort of seemed to change overnight. So that was pretty obvious. Emmett was considered to be nonverbal for about the first 4 years. And that was sort of the first sign, you know, that he wasn't talking. Very intelligent, was able to, you know, navigate his world and figure things out and unlock doors and do all the kind of things that freak parents out about, you know, wandering and whatever. and it was pretty obvious at that point. With Elliot, we just didn't. He presented so differently that it seemed like there wasn't anything going on, right? It just seemed like you're a typical 4-year-old kid. But what we learned was there's a lot of anxiety. Both of the two youngest have ADHD. And when compared at the time to his brothers, he seemed like there wasn't really anything going on, you know, outside of the norm or anything to be concerned about. But when you put him in a classroom with sort of neurotypical peers, that contrast was sort of what we needed to really see what was going on. And for him, it was just a lot of anxiety and sensory issues. And that was the other thing with Emmett, like really bad sensory issues. With Gavin, he had the sensory issues with him were a little bit different, like clothes didn't bother him, stuff like that. But he was like a deep pressure kind of kid. So he was like, you know, running into walls and really heavy weighted blankets, stuff like that. As we're talking about this, I remember we used to have to like pull. He was really big on food. Like it all had to be the same color. There couldn't be like specks of seasoning and pasta sauce or something like that. So we were always having to kind of weed that stuff out. And, but I guess it was, you know, it was fairly, it's obvious now looking back on it, but going through it for the first time, I think Elliot was definitely the hardest one to sort of pick up on some of the more subtleties that, you know, were related to autism.
Yeah. So something you said early in that description, and thank you for that. That was awesome and very thorough, is that with Gavin, and I apologize, I'm going to apologize now because I'm sure I'm not always going to get the right name associated with the right story.
I don't either. So it's fine.
Okay. Well, good. I don't feel so bad. I believe it was with Gavin that you said that you had to grieve the loss of the child that you had known for 4 years. When this regression started to happen. And I want to talk about that a little bit because I so appreciate you, first of all, saying it and acknowledging it, because I think so often parents who are going through what you went through feel guilty or that, and I guess it's just guilt that somehow they're not supposed to be sad. That they're not supposed to grieve, that they still have this wonderful child and, you know, this child is doing different things than they had been, but I'm not supposed to want or grieve for what my child was like before this happened.
Yeah. And I think some of the issue is, and I was just, this is sort of something that just kind of popped up in my life the last couple of days. And, I think part of what the problem is that we have one name to describe this very complex, widely misunderstood human condition, right? Mm-hmm. So you have kids who are very high functioning, and I know that we hate to say high functioning now. And I don't mean that in an offensive way. That's just what I've been used to saying with my kids forever. You have kids who need, who face more challenges in their everyday life. And then you have kids that do just really, really well, that really, maybe they're quirky, maybe a little bit weird, kind of like, you know, just kind of that typical kind of what people think. And they all fall into that same, under that same umbrella diagnosis. And then you have kids who can't feed themselves or use the bathroom or potty train or wear clothes or do anything on their own. And they need 24-hour-a-day, 7-day care for the rest of their lives. They're autistic, right? And so everybody who's, you kind of know what you're exposed to. You know what your world is. And when you are dealing with a kid who's, you know, mainstreamed and doing really well, maybe he has an IEP, maybe they don't have an IEP, but they're just sort of living their lives and doing their thing and just kind of deal with some kind of oddities, you tend to think like that's what everybody's experience is. And that's not the way it is. And so when I say something like, you know, I had to grieve the loss of my son at the time, people get offended. Autistic people get offended, and I get it. But you have to remember that not everybody is dealing with the same thing. You know, most, like my other two kids were born autistic. They were just born the way that they are, and they're beautiful humans, and they're the best part of me, and they're like amazing in every way. And it's the same with Gavin. But the child that we had with Gavin for the first 4 years of his life was very, very different before as opposed to after the regression happened. And so for people like myself, families in my situation, parents in my situation, it's sort of like autism came and sort of stole their child away. And you grieve that loss because the child that was no longer is, and you have to learn to, you have to kind of get to know this new person who's there. And it is that dramatic and it's that profound. And unless you've experienced it, you can't understand what that experience is like. But, you know, people do get, you feel guilty, people get offended. But, you know, I mean, yes, I still have my son and I'm grateful that he's here. And yes, he's all, I mean, the version of him that's it now is the only person that I know, you know. So I don't really remember what he was like before. Which I kind of feel like is a good thing, you know, and I just enjoy the person who's there and love the person who's there and support the person who's there. But there is a difference. There is a difference, I think.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've ever heard about I guess it's technically considered a poem called Welcome to Holland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this falls outside of that, I think, because what a lot of people, I think where the whole grieving thing comes in, the kind of controversy around that or whatever is you just like when you were going through a pregnancy and your child's born, you sort of plan out in your head, like exactly what life is going to be like. You're going to have sporting events, or you're going to have this or that, or whatever. And a diagnosis comes along as you start to notice that things are a little bit different and you grieve. You go through a period of grief where it's like, you know, we might not be able to do all the things that we had planned in our life. We might have to like rearrange everything and do all these other things. And honestly, I think people should be allowed to grieve for that because we're humans, right? And we can feel whatever we feel. And it's not a negative reflection on our kids. It's just a human reaction to a sudden change, you know, something that we had planned that is going to be different. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But a lot of times it's like, well, you know, you still have your kid where there's other parents who actually lose their child and they can't see them every day and they would do anything to be able to see them every day. And I think there's just, there's a lot of nonsense really that kind of goes on in the community and we don't need to bicker over these things or criticize other people for their experiences that we have not experienced ourselves. And so for me, it felt like someone came down in the middle of the night and like beamed him out and dropped down like a clone that just was missing all the personality and all the things that made him him. And he became very robotic and very mechanical about everything. And it was overnight. I mean, it felt that way. And so it's sort of like grieving somebody who has Alzheimer's. Like, you still see that person who's there, but they're not there anymore. You know what I mean? And you have to be able to grieve that loss and accept that and move on. And, you know, I would never criticize someone for experiencing something the way that they do. But you have to find a way forward. You know, you can't just stop and live in that grief. And, you know, it took a lot of time, but, you know, now kind of, like I said, I don't know anything different, and he's an amazing. Right,
you're normal. Yeah.
It's normal.
Right. Yeah. And I always do that when I use that word, because exactly, my normal is not your normal, is not our neighbor's normal, is not the person's down the street's normal.
It's all relative. And,
yeah, exactly. And thank you very much for so honestly sharing about that process, because I think there are different kinds or maybe levels or versions, I'm not sure the right word to use, of grief. Uh-huh. And, you know, like you said, yes, there are some parents who don't have their children physically, you know, in this world anymore. And so they get angry with you and they, you know, make those comments about, well, I would love to have my child here. But I don't think that should diminish the fact that someone else has grief.
Yeah. And most of the criticism tends to come from, honestly, it's like autistic adults who are offended that you would be grieving something that has to do with autism. And it's sort of a very narrow worldview where it's hard for some people to see past their own existence, I guess. Right. And so they feel like they do really well. Every other person who has autism does really well. And that isn't how it works. You know, I have friends who have kids who are going to be dependent on them for the rest of their lives, you know, and to them and to kids who are, you know, they're unable to speak, or like I said, use the bathroom or feed themselves or dress themselves or manage anything in their lives. Autism isn't necessarily viewed as a gift for them. You know, it's right. It's a different situation. And I just think that, I think it comes down to everybody having the same name for like a million different things. And it leads to misunderstandings, and then we end up invalidating other people's experiences, or, you know, we get offended or we get hurt or we get upset because the label is the same, but the circumstances are different, you know? And, I try not to like play in that realm too much, just because it's so frustrating, and you know, people see what they see and they think the way they think, and that's all you can do. And, but yeah, so I think you should be able to grieve. If you need to grieve, grieve and move on. You know, don't live there. You still have amazing experiences ahead of you. It's just different than what you thought it was going to be.
Right. And, you know, your family is a perfect example of the saying, if you know one person with autism, you know one person with autism. Because you have three boys and they're all given that same diagnosis, and each one of them is very different from the other one. And so what has your experiences been with each of them? Give me the high points and then the really like shitty, sorry, points.
Nice.
Them. Of them like going through school, because as you know, as I believe most of my listeners know, you know, I am a special education teacher, special educator, education consultant, master IEP coach, all the things with special education. And I always did my best. And I'm sure even with doing my best, there were things that I could have done better. So tell us some of those really, really good stories.
I already got them.
And the really, really not so good stories.
These are always filed away. Because they were very, very impactful at the moment. So I guess we'll start with Gavin. Gavin had an IEP probably from first grade on, and he started out in a public school system where I live. And We had an IEP, and they were we were kind of struggling to get them to follow it. You know, you kind of assume that, like, IEP, it's a contract. They're obligated by law to follow it. Wasn't always the case. I mean, it isn't always the case. I mean, they if you don't catch it, it doesn't always happen.
Yeah, parents seem to have to be the police when it comes to IEPs, and I'm ashamed to say that as a former special education teacher, but that is the case. I see that all the time now as a master IEP coach and helping families all across the country.
But we would have, like, teachers not show up to meetings because they had to run to the bank. I mean, I remember his homeroom teacher didn't show up to an IEP meeting because she had to run to the bank, you know, and I was thinking, like, man, that's like a, I don't, can you do that? Like, I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, no, she shouldn't, or he shouldn't have been able to do that.
Right. Well, I mean, it was just kind of weird things like that. And then what really got us with Gavin was that he would come home and tell us that, yeah, I got to go to the beach today. And we were thinking, like, oh, that must be, you know, some kind of, like, cool thing, whatever. Well, like, 6 months into it, towards the end of the school year, we found out that the beach was an isolation room. And it was basically like a closet with a picture of a beach, like a beach scene on the wall, right? Kind of like you see in prisons where they have like that kitten hanging on by from a thing, and it's just like hanging there kind of thing. And it was a beach. And so in his view, he was going to the beach. And we didn't know, and no one sent anything home to us. We didn't know anything about it. And then we found out that it was like an isolation room. And at the time,
it just gives me chills to think that how deceptive that is.
We were, like, upset. We were really upset. But there was, you know, you didn't know, like, is that maybe they're allowed to do that? Or maybe that's a normal thing, because we didn't have any of that experience. And it got to the point where we finally pulled them out of the school. And we found a school in Northeast Ohio called Summit Academy. And they are built from the ground up to educate kids with autism, ADHD, and other learning disabilities. And, you know, his IEP carried over, and then they actually added to it, and it took stuff away because the curriculum just sort of incorporated all the things that he would need for the most part. And they based it around martial arts. So the kids learned to control their bodies. They learned discipline and self-respect and respecting their bodies and anti-bullying and all kinds of really cool stuff. And, you know, his life kind of completely changed at that point educationally. You know, he still had problems. He would throw things and whatever, but it was a completely different situation for him once we got him out of that environment and into a better system. And we could have fought it, but at the time there was a custody battle going on. So there were legal issues that were going on with her and her ex-husband, which was been Gavin's biological father. And it was you couldn't wage too many wars at one time. It had to be, we had to pick and choose. And that wasn't a battle that we were advised not to pick it at that point and just to remove him and move on. And that's what we did. So there's the low point, right? And there's the high point. Elliot was at a parochial school, his for preschool. And I mentioned that's when I first recognized that there was something going on. Once he officially had the diagnosis, you know, we would get kind of notes coming home from school saying, like, he was not wanting to engage with people or just kind of little weird things that weren't problems, but they were just sort of typical things for an autistic kid to be doing in a classroom. And it was like, okay, well, you know, he's autistic. So this is pretty normal. And it didn't require them to do anything. It was just kind of let him do his thing. He's not hurting anybody and whatever. And I guess that they eventually got annoyed with the whole thing because they didn't agree that the teachers didn't agree that he was autistic. And so they kind of argued back against us, like, we don't see it. But I'm like, he was diagnosed by, like, top-notch people. Like, they know what they're doing. It's pretty obvious that there's something going on here. And we had to, like, defend the diagnosis kind of thing. And once he got through preschool, he was disinvited to return for kindergarten because, you know,
private schools can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. They were not able to meet his educational needs. And I was really upset because it felt very discriminatory. And they had it was the grade school that I went to when I was a kid. And so they had pursued us. We weren't looking there. You know, they came after us and they were like, hey, you know, let's get Elliot enrolled in here. And I think it'll be great. We'll take care of tuition and all this other stuff. Like, we just want to have you guys here. And we're like, okay. And then once he got the diagnosis, they wanted nothing to do with him after that. That was upsetting. That was very upsetting. Yeah. He then went to Summit Academy for kindergarten and all through his sophomore year in high school and did really, really well. You know, he eventually was off an IEP altogether because he was able to manage and sustain and do everything that he needed to do with the built-in supports that were like, incorporated into their school day. And so that was really, really positive. And then the high point, which sort of comes from another low point, is he was in his sophomore year in high school. He was experiencing a lot of bullying and he was at the high school for kids with autism and ADHD, but autistic kids bully each other still. I mean, you're not immune to kids that are jerks, right? Basically.
Yeah, unfortunately.
And it got to the point where I wouldn't send him to school. So he was out of school for about a month before I even got a response from the principal about like, hey, this is a problem. I wrote all about it. I was so angry. I was so frustrated. I was like, you know, it's a good thing you took so long to get back to me because I've had time to kind of think about what I want to say rather than just lash out. But he decided that he wanted to go to the main high school for our area, which is McKinley, which is the largest high school. I mean, he went from 60 kids in the entire school to like 2,200 or something like that.
And oh my gosh.
His first time being mainstreamed was 2 months left of his sophomore year in high school. And I was so scared. I was so scared. And he did great and never looked back. It was like the best thing that we could have possibly done. It happened in a,
that's so cool.
In a kind of shitty way, as you put it. Right. But
right.
Now we're even. And, but it showed me that like he could do it, you know? And I think this year will be even better because he'll be there from the very start. And so he's not trying to like figure everything out. He already knows the lay of the land and how things work and he can start with everybody and build forward. And so I thought that was that's a high point, I think.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. And I want to, before you talk about Emmett, I want to, right? Because that was Elliot.
That was Elliot.
Okay. Yeah. All right, cool. so before you go on to the youngest, I just want to point out the fact that he was able to get away from having the need for an IEP.
Yep.
I think that we have a very big problem in our education system that when a student gets an IEP, it just suddenly becomes like, okay, well, they're going to have this the rest of forever. Their school career. And that should not be our goal. Our goal should be, as for your son, that they are able to manage everything that they need to manage about themselves within the school system to not need those outside resources to help them, you know, that they've been able to develop the things intrinsically, whether it's sensory and they know what to do to fulfill that need, or it's, you know, academically that we've been able to fill the gaps in enough that they can function with their peers. Or, you know, it's behaviorally that we've helped them figure that out and to know the triggers and how to deal with all of that stuff.
I think we've
gotten complacent. You what?
I'm sorry. Yeah, Emmett, what?
It's okay.
Emmett.
But yeah, so that's my spiel about special ed is that we need to remember that we want these kids to be able to graduate from having an IEP even before they graduate high school.
Well, yeah. And when you were on my show and we were talking about that, that was one of the things that I remembered about one of the things that stuck out about the conversation is you want to, the IEP is to help set up success, right? It's to help them get caught up or help them it kind of levels the playing field, right? It gives them whatever mm-hmm. they need in order to reach their potential. It's not meant to be like a permanent fixture in their life. It should right. be something that helps them. And then over time you reevaluate or, you know, little by little, you start kind of pulling things away and seeing how they do, kind of like training wheels, right? Some people have their training wheels on a little bit longer. you know, than others. Some people maybe never get the training wheels off, but I think most people to some extent can shed the training wheels at some point if they have those supports in place. And what's cool with the school that they were at is that it was all built into the curriculum that was already there. Right. So, but the flip side of that is coming off an IEP in that environment leaves me in a place where I'm wondering what's going to happen in high school, because, sure, you know, Elliot wasn't there long enough really to know if we're going to need something like that. And then I don't know, you know, what Emmett's experience is going to be like, and we just have to kind of figure that out, because he's making that same move, except he's jumping at the beginning of the school year. So it'd be a little bit easier for him to transition, but he'll be mainstream too.
That's so awesome. So before we talk about Emmett, I was at a conference this weekend. It was the Master IEP Coach VIP conference. Kate Swenson was there. She got to tell more about Cooper's journey. And so that was really awesome, because she's been on the show. And so to meet her in person was really cool. But the Master IEP coaches come from all the backgrounds of everyone at the IEP table. There's parents, there's teachers, there's admins, there's therapists. Mm-hmm. To my knowledge, we don't have any former students yet. But I'm hoping as the, you know, program continues to be around and grows and builds that, you know, we will be able to have people who had IEPs when they went through school, and that they are now, you know, part of this, and we can all collaborate. But one of the administrators there said they have a new superintendent in their district, and he reminds the staff that special education is like a vacation spot. It's not a permanent destination. Meaning you're only supposed to be, you know, we want kids only in special education for as long as they absolutely need it and not a second longer, but that the idea is to put them back out with their peers as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciated what that administrator said. And then that kind of, you know, the fact that your middle son has graduated away from needing that. So please now tell us about Emmett.
Well, Emmett did too. Emmett hasn't been on an IEP for, I don't know, 5 years now, something like that.
That's fantastic.
He started out in the same public school system as Gavin did, but a different school. And we thought, okay, we'll just move to a different building. Like, we'll give it a try and see what's going on and go from there, because the school that Elliot was at wasn't taking they didn't have a pre-K classroom yet. So we had to do something. And, you know, Emmett was really well behaved. But he was fidgety, right? Like, he's ADHD kids. I mean, he's fidgety.
Right.
And we had the diagnoses, we had the IEPs, and they would constantly complain to us that he could not sit still, you know? And we're like, well, I mean, no, we can't. We're not.
Right. We're not hiding that. Hello, ADHD diagnosis. What are we?
Right. And he's like 4 years old. I mean, right. 4-year-old's gonna. So we would come to pick him up at school sometimes, and the teachers would be in this, I don't know, it's like a room before you walked into the actual school. It's like doors and then another set of doors, but there's like this room inside of there. And we could hear them talking about Emmett to other parents, about how, like, he couldn't sit still and this and that and the other thing. And we started getting kind of like irritated with that.
Well, yeah.
I try to be super calm and like socially appropriate in a way that I approach problems like this. But like, when it's your kid, it's hard to do that, you know, and you just want to just do what instinct tells you to do.
Right.
And we would talk to the teachers about it, and they would apologize and whatever. But then what happened was we found out they had this it was like his motivation system. And Emmett was very motivated by stickers, right? Like, he just loved stickers. They were like the coolest thing ever. It was like money to him. Like, there was nothing greater than stickers. And so to motivate him, this will really get you. When to motivate him to get like to sit still and stuff like that, they would reward the rest of the class with stickers, but wouldn't give Emmett one because he wasn't sitting still. Right. There's no reason for everybody else to get stickers. It was to, I know. Right. That was me in the moment. And that's what they did. And I was like, how, when we found that out, I was like, how can you do that? Like, how is that even okay? Like, how can you do that? That's so messed up. Like, you're punishing him for being who he is. That's not okay. Like, you can't do that. And he was able to finish out. That was a long time ago, and I don't remember what day it is right now. So I want to say that we were able to finish out the rest of the school year, or this sort of came to a head at the end of the school year. And then we were able to transition him from the Kansas City School District. Whoops. Sorry, Kansas City School District. to Summit Academy for kindergarten. And then he's been there ever since. And again, it's been a whole different experience. You know, he excelled in they do therapeutic martial arts. And he excelled in martial arts. And, you know, he just graduated eighth grade. Did really well. Looking forward to moving to the mainstream high school. And I know that my experience does not represent what everybody's experience is, right? And I know that it doesn't represent what it's supposed to be, but it's what our experience was. And, you know, when you have a school system who is celebrating a D rating because they've improved to a D rating back in the day, I mean, it's a tough thing. And my understanding is they do a lot better now, and I'm happy, glad that they did that. And we're actually back in Kansas City School District now, you know, and they are, the high school is amazing, you know, very inclusive, very diverse. You know, I've been able to connect with the guidance counselor, you know, for Elliot and work with them. And when Elliot will text me with, like, he's feeling really anxious in the class, in the lunchroom, because it's so noisy and stuff like that, I can get a hold of the counselor and they make arrangements for him to eat lunch in the library where he's not having to deal with all of that sensory overload stuff, you know? And so,
right.
We might be able to make it without an IEP, you know? But it helps a lot when the schools are supportive and they are doing what they're supposed to do. And they've come a long way. We've come a long way. And I look forward to working together with them for the success of my kids' educational journey.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I don't know if you know about it, but there is something called a 504.
Yep.
That if he just needs some accommodations and, you know, just some very minute supports as far as those go, like maybe even related services, you know, the 504 may be the way to go. And that can be kind of a gradual step down, honestly, from an IEP to having nothing.
Okay. I thought the 504, and we actually talked about this. It was like the last question that I asked you. We didn't get to go into a lot of detail about it.
Yeah.
I always thought it was more medically necessary kind of thing. So if you had like health issues,
It tends to be more medically associated, but you can have one if you, it's basically that, like I said, at the end of your show, the difference between them is an IEP has goals and objectives in it and requires specially designed instruction. But the 504 is if they just need those extra, accommodations and modifications. That was the very simplistic version of the difference. I mean, there's some other things, but we can talk about that later. Just you and I, we can have a conversation about that.
So I guess, the lesson that I learned from this whole debacle that we went through was that, sometimes, you know, I think the school system at the time was not equipped to deal with the influx of autistic kids that were coming through. I think they wanted to be. I think that they tried to be, but it just failed, right? And many, many years, 10 years go by, almost 10 years go by. And, you know, the high school is, you know, my understanding is that things have improved a lot. We never took the kids out of where they were because they were doing so well. But I think it's important to not be naive, but also not assume that everything is always going to be the same, right? Because it's an imperfect process, and there's a learning curve, and you can just have poorly implemented special education programs or, you know, funding issues like we talked about on my show, where they are promised all this money from the government and then they don't get it, you know? And right. So you have a difficult time and so I'm so far, I'm very impressed with the current situation with the same school system. So good for them.
And that's really good to hear. And I don't know, and I don't think I've ever really shared this on my show, but how many people really realize, you know, like the special education law has really only been in effect for about 45 years. And when it first came into effect, it was boom. Okay. Now we're going to educate everybody. Well, there were no special education teacher licensing programs prior to that law being instituted. So who became the special education teachers? From my understanding, whoever was willing to do it, you know, like it could be the cafeteria ladies. My mentor, Catherine Witcher, says that often. She's like, the people who took over some of the special education classrooms were not necessarily teachers who had been trained to be teachers, but people who, like I said, were, you know, and she says, I know of people who had been cafeteria workers and they were now the special education teachers. And so you've had a whole generation grow up with that sort of type of teaching. Like, we don't know what to do. Yep. We're just, again, our federal government says, here, you have to do this, but we're not going to help you and teach you and, you know, give you anything. Just figure it out. And so we're really just a couple generations removed from that. And so there are so many people who don't know. Like you said, you think your school wants to, and I think most school districts want to, but it's having the people in there who have been trained, who have the mindset of educating anyone who walks into their classroom.
Yeah.
We do a very poor job in our country of educating our gen educators about special education things. And honestly, with as many different diagnoses of disabilities that there are now, there is no way to educate a teacher on every disability that they may have in their classroom, which is why what I do now working with parents is to remind the teachers, like, it's okay. You don't have to know everything. Ask the parents, collaborate with the parents, partner, whatever word you want to use, because they're going to do a lot of the work for you, because you're going to research all that you can about autism and things that are working for other people whose children have autism. And, you know, but that teacher, whether they be a special ed or a gen ed teacher, they can't do that for every single student who comes into their room with every disability that they're walking in with now.
Yep.
And so utilize that resource of the parent. If you are the parent,
make yourself available.
Make yourself available. Yeah, I started to say push your way in, but I was going to say do it nicely. but I like make yourself available. That's nicer.
Bees with honey.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, it is a really sad state, especially when it's put into that perspective, I think. Like, you know, they are trying. They are improving. But it is a slow process because it just is – it just takes a long time for change to happen. And being with, there were over 70 master IEP coaches, and every one of us, like I told you, all the different fields that we represent, we're all wanting to change special education because we all recognize that it can and needs to be better. Mm-hmm. So those are just the ones who could attend the conference. There are hundreds of master IEP coaches now around the country, and we are working and bringing awareness to the fact that things need to be different. So hopefully in 10 more years, you and I can maybe come back together on your show or my show, and we can say, it's not like that anymore. it's millennial ways down the road better.
Yep. Yeah. I hope so. And I think it's a work in progress. You know, I mean, there's, you know, when you were mentioning the special education, like, The school that my kids went through, Summit Academy, there was an amazing school. I rarely had issues with them. I mean, there were some weird things that I didn't agree with, but my understanding was, because I had asked about this, and I don't know what the status is now, but the school that they were in had no actual special education teachers, right? They were just general ed teachers who were super patient and got up every day, and their sole purpose was to educate kids that were deemed uneducatable. Uneducatable? I don't know, whatever.
Educable.
I wasn't sure if that was actually a word. But yeah, you know what I mean? And so you have just nice people who are doing a good job. You know, so it's not perfect, but
no,
it works.
And it will never be, because we're always dealing with people, and people are not perfect. Apparently. So things will always go wrong. So we've got about 10 or 15 minutes before I try to really shut it down. But if we go longer, then I'll use my video editing software and make it 2 episodes. But so I want to know, like, at what point, and what was I think we know the why, but in case we don't, when you became the autism dad, when did you start putting all of this stuff out there and doing your blog? And while you're talking about that, I'm going to pull up your website so people can see it. And I'm also going to pop it up here.
So I started writing, the original blog that I had, like, way, way back. I think it started like in 2010, was called Lost and Tired, because that's what I felt like. Yep. There it is. Look at that.
It's not surprised.
And, you know, I thought it was kind of fitting because lost and tired, right? Like, that's sort of how I felt. People were feeling lost and overwhelmed and tired and exhausted and everything else. And so I ran with that really until I think it was about 2014, so a few years. And then when my ex-wife and I separated the first time, I decided that I needed to change things up a little bit and sort of tell a different story, I guess, because I feel like our journey had changed, you know, and now it was a story of myself and my kids. And so I had to, look at that one right there. Recommended guys. That's pinned, just so that you know.
Awesome.
and so that's how it kind of got started. I rebranded with the Autism Dad because people would complain like lost and tired was negative, or it was like a negative connotation, sure, or whatever. And so, you know, I rebranded to the Autism Dad, and I thought, okay, this is sort of like my kids are getting older, you know, and so it's going to be less about their stuff and more about my stuff out of, you know, privacy concerns and things like that. Mm-hmm. And it just sort of grew into this, you know, thing, and been able to build a business around it and launch the podcast, which is a lot of fun. And I get to connect with like really cool people like you, and I get to help, I know, parents, and, you know, bridge some gaps and, you know, stuff like that. So,
yeah. So you've actually been on all of these shows?
Yes. Well, Entrepreneur was a interview, magazine interview.
Okay.
And NBC News Live, I did some consultant stuff, like on camera commentary things during COVID about the impact of like remote learning on special education, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. BBC Worldwide was an embarrassing one that I have never seen, and I can't find it because I thought it was off camera and it was just audio. Like I was voicing over something, and it turned out it was not, it was live. And I was in my pajamas. Right. if you can ever find that clip, I would love to see it, cause I have never been able to find it. And then the Tamron Hall show, I was on, I worked with them for, I don't know, it was a couple of months, putting together a show that highlighted the challenges associated with like COVID lockdown and how it impacts our kids with, you know, special education needs, and like having to become the teacher at home is a horrible thing for anybody. And for most people, I'm not one of those people who relishes the idea of trying to teach my kids stuff because it's that kind of stuff. It's hard. Right. But, you know, I was on there with Holly Robinson Peach. She's a friend of mine. And it was a really cool experience. You know, we got to meet some new people and I don't know, very lucky, I feel. And CNN, the awesome. CNN thing was my first viral article I wrote. I got picked up by CNN and I published on CNN's website.
Very cool. Congratulations for all of that. That is fantastic. And that's what we need. And there is getting to be more and more, you know, podcasts like yours and mine and more books being written like Kate's and mine. And I'm hoping someday yours and, because you don't have enough to do, so you know, just write a book.
I've been asked to do that. Like I've had offers in the past, and the idea. Well, I think when we talked, I'm 43 now. I'll be 44 next month, and I was just diagnosed with ADHD within like the last 2 months. Oh. And the idea of writing a book is so overwhelming that I'm like, nope. Don't even come at me with that because I can't even but I think that would be a cool thing. Actually, the more time goes on, I would just need a lot of help.
Well, I can hook you up. And if you already have, I mean, you know, Kate and Kate's got contacts and I mean, you can get ghostwriters and you can just say what you want to write and they'll write it for you. So you don't actually have to sit down and do the actual writing.
Yeah. Kate and I talked about the process for her book. And I'm not super excited about trying to withstand that. I don't know how she did it, but she did a really good job. And you know,
yeah, she went with a publisher and had what, like 6 months or something to write her whole book. And
yeah, it was like six months. 6 months to have, I don't know. It's like, I don't remember, 400 pages or something. I don't know. I don't know how many pages it is.
Uh-oh. Speaking of, look who's here. Can you see who that is?
Oh, yeah. Hey. Hey, look at this book.
Yeah. Hey, look at this book. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Hey, this is a good one. Yeah.
Is yours, mine's autographed. Is yours signed off to you specifically?
Yes, it is.
Not that we're, you know, comparing or anything. Oh, wow. Yours was a lot longer dedication, Kate. Come on.
Yeah, but I don't know. We met in person for the first time at a conference earlier in the year. And then we talk occasionally and she's been on the show. But I don't know how she does half of what she does. It's remarkable. And I try to emulate her just every once in a while. What would Kate do to navigate some of this stuff? But yeah, Kate's awesome. Her whole family's awesome. Yeah.
We had an opportunity to hear her speak at the conference over the weekend and she had us in tears. She had us laughing. She is, and the book is amazing. I had her on my hashtag No Limits the week after her book released. And so she was still like, I was the one who got to tell her that she was a number one bestseller on Amazon at that point because it was tagged that way on her thing. And she was like, wow, I didn't know that. So,
very, very cool.
But yeah, she is really amazing. And yeah, having four children and all the things that she does and the writing of the book. And I'm a self-published author. So my writing process was very different than what you were just and what she has talked about. So either way, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say. So, but yeah, I think it would be good to have, like I said, for the advertisement for this, to have a dad's perspective is unusual. I've had, you know, your episode 94, I believe, and I think I might have had maybe 8 dads on the shows.
Well, they like when you asked when I got started, there was like a vacuum back then. And I think when Kate and I were talking, I think she started. I thought she, and I could be wrong, so forgive me, Kate. I thought it was like 2011 or something that she started her her blog.
And she said it at the weekend, and I don't, it was 2007, and then I have 2012 in my head, so I'm not sure what.
There was, and like when we both started, because we talked about this before too, and there was like a vacuum of information. So there were no dads talking about it, like period. And there was a lot of like mommy bloggers and stuff like that, because that was still a big thing back then. But there was nobody specifically talking about their experience raising autistic kids or kids with disabilities.
Right.
And when I started mine, it was totally by accident. You know, like I didn't intend anybody to ever read it, And it was supposed to be like a digital journal, right? Just on WordPress. I had no idea. Right. So naive and so stupid. But I thought it was private. So I was like word vomiting all those things that are going around in your head that you don't ever say out loud to people. And I felt better about it. Like it was therapeutic. I'd walk away from it and feel like, okay, you know, like I can put that down and I can go do something else. And I started getting comments and I'm like, what is happening? Like, how is this happening? How,
yeah, that would be frightening.
It was very frightening because like I had no exposure to the internet before. I had no, I was a very private person and everything. But what I found was it wasn't people judging me. It was people saying like, oh my God, I was the only person who was feeling like this. I thought I was the only person who felt resentment or felt frustration or felt anger or felt defeated or felt broken or whatever it was that I had said at the time. And I just started connecting then. I thought, you know, it helps me to put this stuff out there because I feel better and I can walk away from it. And it seems to be helping other people because I'm saying the things out loud that they're keeping to themselves. Right. And they feel isolated and alone. And it just grew into this thing. And I don't know, you know, and now there's more dads doing it, you know, and I'm pretty sure Kate spearheaded the whole moms talking about all that stuff. And, you know, it just sort of spread, which is a good thing. You know, you encourage everybody to share their story. So we don't have that whole, all of these different things being called the same thing. You get all these different voices and all these different faces and all these different experiences so that you can sort of parse the differences and you recognize that autism for my kids is different than autism for your kids. And, you know, you can inspire other parents to just keep going. Like Kate, her thing is like, try one more thing, like do one more thing, like quit today. That's fine. But tomorrow do one more thing. And it's powerful stuff, especially when you feel like you have no direction to go in and you have no support or you feel alone and guilty and shame and all these things that parents go through. So it's helpful, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And she said something over the weekend that I knew, but the way that she put it, and it was, isolation is the silent killer of special needs families that the rest of the world knows nothing about.
Ooh, that's
good. And I posted that as
goosebumps. I got goosebumps on that one. That was really good.
Yeah. And I turned that into a post and put that out there today. And then the title of it was Let This Sink In. You know, special education teachers live on an island, but the island that the parents of a student with a disability or students with disabilities live on, feel that isolation is incredibly different. And so Kate, if you're still on here, thank you for that. That was a beautiful statement and so very true. And, I don't live in that world, but it bothers me that you all in that community feel that way, because it shouldn't be that way. You have beautiful children just like the rest of us, and we should all be able to love on you and love you and have you know about it. And Rob, that goes for you and you know,
thank you.
All the parents that are watching. My passion is for you and your children, mostly your children, but for you to be heard and seen as well. So, on that very happy note, it is time to end. And so Rob, again, thank you so much for joining me today. Next week, I will have Nicole, who was a master IP coach who I got to meet in person this past weekend, and it was wonderful. So thank you all and have a great week.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.